Hey, this is Mark in San Antonio, Texas. I love the Gospel Tangents podcast because it has some of the best and most diverse guests in the field of Mormon studies. They're people whose work I've read and enjoyed and that I would love to sit down and have a chat with. And the podcast lets me have that experience vicariously.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. More than 600 men and women were called to be electioneer missionaries in 1844 when Joseph Smith decided to run for President of the United States of America. It was the largest missionary force ever assembled and was to be the largest for more than 50 years after that. In our next conversation with Dr. Derek Sainsbury, we'll talk more about these missionaries. Check out our conversation. Hey, I just wanted to mention one other thing. Beyond the Blocks is an awesome podcast, and it seeks to center the narratives of the marginalized in conversations on Mormonism. A Black lifelong member and queer theologian, Brother Jones and Brother Knox, seek to fill the gaps between Mormon theology and Mormon culture that find all kinds of identities may claim a seat at the table of Christ. So check out Beyond the Block. It's a great podcast. Now back to our conversation. So Governor Boggs was in Missouri. Then they got kicked out. The new governor was Governor Carlin
in Illinois.
Illinois, and then Ford replaced him
in 1842.
So it was Carlin that made Joseph a lieutenant governor, and Carlin
lieutenant general.
Yeah. Carlin was was he a Whig or a Democrat?
He was a Democrat. And so now they're going to, in the 1842 election, gubernatorial election, the Saints, actually, they're the ones supporting Ford. They actually support Ford, who wins pretty handsomely.
Because of the Block voting for the Saints?
Or? Yeah, well, not just because. I mean, he wins Hancock County because of that, but the Saints' vote difference wouldn't have made a difference.
He would have won anyway.
But in all local elections, that was for sure a thing. And coming up in 1844, the Saints were only growing and growing and growing and growing. And Illinois law allowed someone who moved into Illinois to vote 6 months later, even if they were foreign. And so you have all these English converts that are also showing up, right? And they're allowed to vote within 6 months' time. And so the block of people that are living, that are Latter-day Saints in Western Illinois, is just growing and growing and growing. And so when he kicks this campaign off, like I said, he sends this political pamphlet out that's his platform. And it's actually a very forward-looking platform for the day. He calls for fewer congressmen with lower pay. He calls for prison reform. This is still a time of debtor's prison, and he's experienced a lot of prison himself and corrupt justice system. He calls for expansion to bring into the Union Texas, which was an independent republic at the time, to bring into the Union Oregon. And so he's for expansion, what's called manifest destiny later.
Jackson was a manifest destiny guy, wasn't he?
That term really didn't exist, but yeah, I mean, Democrats wanted to push west, wanted to continent to continent, right?
Mm-hmm. Coast to coast.
Coast to coast, sorry, yeah, the whole continent, coast to coast. And so he also advocated for a national bank with branches in every state. The biggest two things that he advocated was, the one is that he advocated the sale of federal land, which there was still a ton of federal land in the territories west of the Mississippi, to purchase the freedom of the slaves. And so he wasn't like a radical abolitionist, but he believed that in that political pamphlet, he says that we should sell that land and purchase the freedom of the slaves and allow them to labor and work for money just like anyone else. And so that's a way forward looking thing, right? That even some politicians later will say, you know, boy, someone had put up an idea that might have avoided this civil war when they look back. And then finally, the biggest thing that he advocates is more power for the president. to be able to interfere in the states if something's going wrong, as it happened in Missouri and was now starting to happen in Illinois. The Bill of Rights could not be enforced by the federal government in states. It was a federal thing. And it's not until the 14th Amendment, which is passed after the Civil War, that all the liberties of the Constitution, of the U.S. Constitution, can also be enforced inside of states. And so this platform goes out, and it gets commented on by newspapers all over the country. Some make fun of it. Some say, oh, this is a good idea, but this is a bad idea, so forth and so on. And there's this call to all available elders to try and make General Conference in April because they're going to have a meeting. And so in General Conference in April, it's a four-day conference. The last conference is just a meeting of the elders. And it's run by Brigham Young and the 12 apostles. And they say, we're going to send out missionaries, electionary missionaries, and you will preach and politic. And we're going to set up these conferences in all of these different states, and the 12 will come in and meet you in these conferences until we have a convention in July in Baltimore, which is where the Whigs and the Democrats were also having their convention.
Both parties were having it in the same
city? Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So that his would have been the third convention in Baltimore. Obviously not anywhere near as big, but that was that's the thinking that was going into it. And they call for volunteers, and 277 of them volunteer that day. By the time they print their names and assignments in the newspaper 2 weeks later, or a week later, excuse me, there's over 300. And in my research over the past 15 years, I have the number up now to 621. So this is a huge missionary effort, which is one of the reasons we know that it was a serious effort.
Well, and I know you mentioned in your book that it was the largest proportion of missionaries that the church has ever had.
Ever.
Right?
So till today.
Let's say, how many people do we have in our church now?
Over 16 million.
16 million. So what would be, 600 missionaries back then would be proportionately, what would be the same number for us?
Oh, so we're looking at, can I use my calculator? you're looking at in the hundreds of thousands of missionaries.
Hundreds of thousands. And, you know, I know we've got the coronavirus, but we were having 60,000.
Yeah, you're looking at a lot more than that. You're looking at hundreds of thousands.
So 2 to 3 times more of that?
Easily. In fact, just even in the numbers of missionaries, over 600, the church never sees that again until, 60 years later in 1905 is when they hit that number again of missionaries that are actually out. So this is a big deal. And they go, they leave and start fanning out across the nation. And at the same time, Joseph Smith has organized the Council of 50, which has been kind of a big deal in the past few years because the church, through the Joseph Smith papers, printed the minutes of the Council of 50. And so they're no longer this tightly kept secret about what was going on. And that actually came out in between when I finished my dissertation about this topic and when I finished the book. And so what in reading the minutes of the Council of 50 just backed up everything I'd said. In fact, made it, they were more serious about the election than even I had written in my dissertation. They're talking about it in their meetings. They're talking about what they're going to do. They're talking about where they want to send people, as well as talking about if this doesn't work out, where are we going to go? Are we going to go to Texas? Are we going to go to Oregon? Are we going to go to California? Where are we going to go next? So they're working all these things. And eventually, basically after that April conference, this Council of 50 decides to go all in on the election. And more than half of them leave themselves to go out and electioneer. And so, yeah, so you have these missionaries now going all over the nation, preaching and politicking. Which sounds really odd.
Well, it kind of sounds like the Christian right today. I mean, could we compare, you know, Pat Robertson ran for president
in 88.
88. So it's been that long. Wow. It's hard for me to believe that. But I mean, it's not unusual for Christians to run for political office or even for president. Could we compare Joseph Smith to a Pat Robertson in that sense?
In the sense of deep religious involvement, yes, but not in the sense of, you know, imagine you and I sitting down and I say to you, you know, I'm one companion and he teaches you about Joseph Smith the prophet and the Book of Mormon and the Restoration and angels of return. And then my companion says, and he's running for president and to save the nation. And here's this pamphlet, here's why you should vote for him. And so even like when they would do their conferences, these conferences, one day would be basically religious and then the next day would be all political. And they would draw to both, and especially on the political ones, they would draw pretty good crowds to come listen to the message. And so it's not the same in the sense that, you know, almost all, like 98% of the missionaries were already members of the church. And you're looking at a religious leader of an entire church, right? And a new and kind of strange to the rest of the American public church, who's in his pamphlet is calling for this kind of theodemocracy, this blending of having being able to petition God on behalf of the people, right?
Well, see, that sounds like Pat Robertson to me. Because why can't we have God in our politics? And you'll hear Christian politicians that will talk about, you know, even Thomas Jefferson and George Washington that were great Christian men and great Christian leaders, and we need to have God in our life. But you also have other people that say, well, wait a minute, separation of church and state. You know, the early founding, I think it was Rhode Island, Connecticut, Pennsylvania especially, was a kind of a Quaker community.
Right.
This idea of separation of church and state really didn't exist until, I think it was Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
I think so. I think I know what you're saying.
Yeah. And so was there a dispute as to whether it was good to have Christians in government or should they have been separated?
No, I mean, everybody's a Christian back then, right? I mean, either whether they're really practicing or not, it's not comparable to kind of the way Christianity is looked at today. But to be so adamant about it, that's why you're running and that's, you know, that you are calling, you know, you are going to be able to call on heaven to protect and save this corrupt republic, that's different. Especially in that time. And it's interesting as these missionaries go out and do this, you know, they end up all the way from Maine down to Louisiana. You know, they're everywhere. And the newspapers say they're coming, right? Most of them would go down the Mississippi to St. Louis. And then from St. Louis, go up Ohio, continue down the Mississippi or whatever on these steamboats. And so the St. Louis, Missouri papers would say, there's another, you know, here's another 60 electioneers, missionaries of Joseph Smith. And so people that were reading the paper a lot around the country knew that Joseph Smith was running for president. A lot of them printed his pamphlet or portions of it in their newspapers. So they knew a little bit about that. He was already kind of a minor celebrity in the idea of when he'd come back east to meet with Van Buren, he'd also gone on a preaching tour. And, you know, filled the halls in Washington, D.C., in New York City, in Philadelphia. Everybody wanted to see this. And then there were lots of newspaper reports about this growing Mormon menace, right? This growing Mormon empire on the Mississippi. And so it's making some noise, you know, before he's assassinated.
Well, and it's always interesting to me because I always like to compare, you know, what would, if there was a Joseph Smith figure today, would he be... I mean, how would he be like an Andrew Yang, for example, that just recently ran for president, where you'd have to be kind of a political junkie to even know who that was? Or would he be like a Pete Buttigieg, where he kind of a guy from nowhere that came pretty close, you know, to run for president?
Right.
I know Jesse Jackson ran for president. I mean, do you have a modern day equivalent or, you know, Pat Robertson, we've talked a little bit about. Who would be the modern day Joseph Smith equivalent in our day?
Modern day, I think that Pat Robertson comparison is probably as close as you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Because he did have a whole political movement, you know, the religious right, to be able to mobilize, right? And, you know, that's probably the best comparison. I mean, they wouldn't like to make that comparison.
Right,
and,
right.
And honestly, we probably yeah. wouldn't want to like
We're
that comparison.
We're probably going to get a lot of evangelicals to be like, how dare you compare Joseph to...
Right, but as far as that kind of idea of a deeply religious motivation for running for the presidency,
mm-hmm.
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. That would probably be the closest comparison.
Okay. Well, was he as successful as, say, Pat Robertson?
Well, and here's the reason why most people don't know he ran. We never get to find out.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Derek Sainsbury. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about a modern political assassination that was similar to Joseph Smith. I mean, I think the closest modern-day equivalent is probably Bobby Kennedy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, that's the next book I'm already writing is
oh, really?
A comparison between those two.
Oh, wow, that'll be interesting.
Because he's the only other candidate, right,
in the history of the United States. Wallace got shot, I guess,
shot, but
he didn't
die. Shot
but
not killed, yeah. So.
Oh, really? So is that, those are the only two
only
people
two.
That have been killed is Joseph Smith and Bobby Kennedy?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's your trivia question when you're on Jeopardy.
Wow, that's really interesting. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents. And for just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruption. If you'd like a paperback version of our transcripts, go to amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview. Also, if you'd like to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website, and I'll be able to send you a transcript as soon as they are completed, and click the subscribe button. You can also find our latest information on facebook.com/gospeltangents, as well as we're on Twitter @gospeltangents. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. The link is at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents, and you can subscribe there. Also, please give us a 5-star review. If you want to support all of the podcasts as part of the Dialogue Podcast Network, go to lyceum.fm, that's lyceum.fm, and do a search for Dialogue Podcast Network or Gospel Tangents, because, you know, that's a pretty cool one, too. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.